Welcome to the Farm Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorneys navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm Major Jason Floyd.
On this episode of Far and Beyond, we'll delve into the enduring history of the Buy American Act. This is a critical area for us in federal contracting, particularly within the Department of War, as these regulations are designed to strengthen the American economy and prevent the displacement of manufacturing and jobs by foreign labor.
So Ellie, I've heard of a little bit about the Buy American Act. Is that the only thing out there that strengthens the American economy?
No, Buy American Act isn't the only one, but it certainly is probably one of our oldest that we have in place still. So the federal government has a long history of implementing domestic preferences, dating back to the Great Depression.
So Ellie, I've heard in passing that the Buy American Act is really all about creating this domestic preference. What is a domestic preference and how far back does it go?
So the federal government has a long history of implementing domestic preferences dating back to the Great Depression. Today, there are three major domestic preference regimes we deal with: the Buy American Act of 1933, or BAA, the Trade Agreements Act of 1979, TAA, and Department of War's specific restrictions. Then Berry and Kistler amendments and specific NDAA restrictions. These all require federal agencies to purchase items produced or manufactured in the United States, though they come with various exceptions and exemptions. Navigating these can be complex, making compliance a significant challenge for federal contracting personnel.
Got it. So those are the domestic preference regimes. Are we pretty good at compliance?
Not really. In a DoD IG audit report from August 2015, the IG found that the Navy failed to consistently comply with the Berry Amendment for 11 of 23 audited contracts. Additionally, the Navy and Marines contracting personnel did not ensure compliance with the Buy American Act for 12 of 32 audited contracts and failed to include mandatory domestic preference terms in contracts and lacked sufficient knowledge of the Buy American Act and Berry Amendment. In February 2016, the DODIG found compliance issues with domestic preference in an audit of 54 Air Force contracts. This is a very difficult area of the law, especially when it keeps changing, which we're going to talk about. Today, I think we'll just focus on the Buy American Act.
Okay, so I get it. There's a bunch of different domestic preferences out there, different regimes, as it were. How far back does the Buy American Act go?
The Buy American Act was first introduced during the Great Depression. Its primary goal at that time was to protect American jobs from inexpensive foreign labor. The history of the BAA reflects the tension between protecting American jobs and industry and fostering international trade and diplomacy. The original bill, known as the Wilson Bill, was introduced by Representative Wilson in March 1932. It aimed to prioritize U.S. manufactured and unmanufactured goods for public use, requiring that these materials be mined, produced, or manufactured wholly within the United States.
Any goods for public use? That seems pretty comprehensive.
This initial version was quite stringent, even requiring components with an end product to be of U.S. origin. However, even with these strict requirements, the bill included specific exceptions. Foreign products could be used if they conflicted with public interest, incurred unreasonable cost, or when domestic materials were unavailable.
So for a domestic preference statute that excluded those, it seems like there probably would have been some pushback, right?
Yes. So concerns were raised about potential retaliation from other countries, as you can expect, and the negative impact on international trade, so especially with European nations. One argument was this bill was unpatriotic, as it would decrease trade rather than increase it.
Yeah, and that makes sense because there was, you know, some sort of, I don't know, global depression going on, right?
Yeah, if we didn't really want to stifle trade, we really were trying probably to encourage it, really trying to encourage jobs, especially with certain countries in Europe who are our allies. We really didn't want to hurt them at this time.
Sure, that makes sense. So what came next, though?
So we obviously still have an act, so what happened? So in 1933, Senator Johnson offered a revised version, which Congress adopted on March 3rd. This version introduced one crucial difference. It no longer demanded that goods be manufactured entirely from U.S. materials. Instead, it required that the end products be manufactured from articles, materials, and supplies that are substantially all produced in the United States. This adjustment was a strategic move aimed at balancing the need to protect American manufacturing without stifling foreign trade.
Well, Ellie, we didn't like just not import things, right? So what did the statute require for those goods that were going to be imported that were not substantially all produced in the United States?
So basically, the Buy American Act operated as a super tariff. It imposed on foreign manufacturers seeking to do business with the government. So the government applied a price evaluation factor of 25% to a manufactured product if the cost of the foreign supplies used to manufacture the product was more than 25% of the total cost of all such supplies. This was the first test applied to foreign goods under the Buy American Act.
So it was an evaluation factor, which most of us, I think, are pretty familiar with. Okay, that makes sense. All right, so is the percentage increase for that price evaluation factor still 25% today?
So no, a significant shift occurred in 1954 when President Eisenhower issued Executive Order 10582. This order redefined what constituted a foreign product, establishing that materials would be classified as foreign origin if the cost of the foreign products used accounted for 50% or more of all components in their production. So EO 10582 also altered the price differential used to determine if domestic materials were unreasonably priced compared to foreign ones, changing it from 25% to either 6% or 10%, depending on the price of the foreign materials offered.
So are you saying, Ellie, that if a product had 49% or less of their components were foreign produced, then this did not apply?
That's right.
Okay, what was the next major shift?
So really, the Buy American Act remained largely unchanged until 2009, when the Federal Acquisition Regulation Council waived the cost of components test for commercially available off-the-shelf or COTS items.
Ellie, let me stop you there. What is a COTS item?
A COTS item is a commercial product sold in the marketplace without modification for the government. So this really what this waiver meant was that as long as the COTS items are manufactured in the United States, they can qualify as domestic end products, regardless of where their components originated. It's also important to remember that BAA restrictions do not apply to information technology that is a commercial product.
Interesting. That IT aspect is a really interesting one, actually. It's probably because we weren't making a lot of that stuff here, right?
I think it was also hard to decipher what products, especially on commercial items, trying to walk into Walmart and decide, is this item a foreign product or a domestic product? You would have to start tracking where each individual part came from. I think logistically, it was going to be hard.
So that's just a common sense approach to it. I see. Okay. So when I first got into contracting as a practitioner, there was a lot of emphasis placed, and it seemed to be renewed on the Buy American, all that stuff, domestic preferences. What happened? What am I thinking about?
So you're exactly right. In the last several years, several executive orders have significantly influenced the interpretation and application of the Buy American Act. So starting on April 18th, 2017, President Trump signed Executive Order 13788, Buy American and Hire American. This order aimed to strengthen laws promoting domestic manufacturing and employment, focusing on economic and national security. It directed agencies to ensure compliance with Buy American laws, evaluate the impact of waivers on U.S. manufacturing, and propose policies to maximize domestic materials usage. Agencies must evaluate whether cost advantages for foreign products stem from practices like dumping or subsidies, while emphasizing the priority of purchasing domestic goods and promoting economic growth. This EO did not directly modify the Buy American Act itself, but definitely brought it back to the forefront. So building on this, President Trump then signed Executive Order 13858, strengthening Buy American preferences for infrastructure projects, on January 31st, 2019. Specifically, this order encourages federal agencies to use U.S.-produced iron, aluminum, steel, cement, and other manufactured products in federal contracts. This order further emphasized the importance of procuring domestic goods with federal funds, but again, did not modify the BAA. Notably, this EO was partially revoked by a later executive order.
All right, so you talked about two of the executive orders that occurred early on that are really focused on materials. Is there anything else that came after that?
So a truly significant change came with President Trump's executive order 13881, maximizing use of American-made goods, products, and materials, issued on July 15th, 2019. After 65 years, this order revoked EO 10582 that President Eisenhower originally signed and eliminated the 50% cost of components test for manufactured products. Instead, President Trump directed the FAR Council to implement a new test with three proposed rules. So first, iron or steel COTS items must be manufactured in the U.S. with only 5% of the total cost attributed to foreign iron or steel. Second, non-iron steel end products are considered domestic if more than 55% of the total cost of all components is from domestic sources. And then third, it introduced price adjustments on foreign offers to prioritize domestic suppliers, applying a 20% adjustment for large businesses and a 30% adjustment for small businesses on the price of foreign materials. However, it's important to note that if an item was a non-iron steel COTS item, the cost of components test would not apply.
Okay, so one of the big takeaways there then is if it's a COTS item and it's not iron or steel, then we're not talking about the cost of components test. That does seem like a pretty big shift.
It was a big shift. This was the first significant change to the BAA in 86 years. But its impact was short-lived, as it was subsequently revoked by President Biden's Executive Order 14005. So President Biden issued Executive Order 14005, ensuring the future is made in all of America by all of America's workers, on January 25th, 2021. This comprehensive order aimed to strengthen domestic content restrictions in federal procurement. With this executive order, President Biden revoked Section 5 of Executive Order 13858 and Executive Order 13788 and superseded both Executive Orders 10582 from President Eisenhower and Executive Order 13881 from President Trump.
That sounds like a lot of change. What are some of the key issues that were drawn out there?
So some of the key provisions from this executive order included the establishment of a Made in America office within the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, tasked with enforcing domestic preference statutes and reviewing waivers. This EO also directed the FAR Council to propose new provisions to, first, replace the cost of components test with one measuring domestic content based on the value added to the product through U.S.-based production or U.S. job-supporting economic activity. Two, increase the numerical threshold for evaluating domestic content requirements. Three, increase price preferences for domestic end products. And four, examine the COTS information technology exception and recommend modifications or removal.
Okay, so wow, this is a great history. If I wanted to find out how this has been incorporated into the FAR, if it has, where do I go?
So the FAR Council published changes to FAR Part 25. They issued a final rule that raised the domestic content threshold from 55% to 60% in 2022. Furthermore, in 2024, the domestic content threshold was raised to 65%. Future increase is scheduled in 2029 to 75%.
So it seems like the thresholds are ever increasing and we really are trying to buy more American, right? But let's talk about today. As a practitioner, are there exceptions that I should be aware of?
Yes. The BAA includes several important exceptions that allow for flexibility in federal procurement while still prioritizing domestic products, the original intent of it. So first, a waiver is allowed if using domestic end products would be inconsistent with public interest, such as when an agency has an agreement with a foreign government providing a blanket exception. Next, if an agency determines that domestic end products are unavailable, insufficient and reasonably available quantity and quality, the requirement may be waived. The FAR provides a list of predetermined non-availability items in FAR 25.104. Next, if the cost of a domestic end product is deemed unreasonable, purchasing a foreign end product may be justified. A comparative evaluation using the price evaluation adjustment formula, 20% for large businesses and 30% for small businesses, is applied in accordance with FAR Part 25. Items specifically intended for resale at a commissary are exempt. And finally, as mentioned earlier, the BAA does not apply to COTS information technology. So in addition to these exceptions, there are certain situations where the Buy American Act simply just does not apply. So items purchased for use outside of the United States are not subject to the domestic content restrictions. If a procurement is covered by a trade agreement, the Trade Agreements Act, TAA, supersedes the Buy American Act, and the item is treated equivalently to a U.S. domestic product. And lastly, the BAA does not apply to purchases at or below the micro-purchase threshold, which is currently at $10,000.
Ellie, I got to tell you, this is a super complicated area. It sounds like every time you need to do a procurement that may be subject to Buy American rules, you just got to do the research.
You really do, especially for the last several years. I mean, the rule has constantly been changing. We have another increase coming in 2029. It really is critical that you understand when the Buy American Act applies and then how are you going to apply it. Doing that and having that knowledge really will help your contracting office out.
Wow, Ellie, I am taken aback. That was super deep, but also super helpful. Thanks so much for it.
Thank you for joining me today on this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We love to hear from our listeners, so please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. You can find the information in today's show notes. As always, the views expressed today are those of the presenter, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of War.